We are Science Fiction Remnant, a podcast for sci-fi lovers spanning across books, movies, TV shows, and games.
This is Season 1, Episode 21, movie Blade Runner, to Android's Dream of Electric Sheep for October 11, 2020.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Science Fiction Remnant. Thank you so much for coming back.
This means a lot to us. We hope that you find this episode as exciting to listen as it was for us to create for you.
If you like this show and know someone who might like this podcast, please share it. It would help us greatly in growing this channel.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Remnant and share any comments you have about this podcast with your friends and family. We appreciate it. Thank you. Well, welcome to our show tonight again, everybody, and we have a special episode today. I would like to call it Three Guys and a Mic with a very special person to me, a friend of mine and brother of mine, Jose. We go back to old days, and we're going to talk about a very special movie tonight, Blade Runner, actually. They both, Robert and Jose, have watched it before. I never did, which I was surprised. I never seen such a great movie before. What do you say, guys?
Yeah, this movie is, to me, is a classic, and I'm sure everybody listening to us will agree. If you love the science fiction genre, this is one of the first movies on your list. This movie actually cost $28 million to make, and it actually made $41.5 million at the box office. And, you know...
That's quite a show return.
It is quite a blow and a hit.
Yeah.
And not in a good way. That's...
You know, it's to be expected from the director, Ridley Scott, with many of you recognize him from the movie Aliens. It's an amazing director.
Yes.
So, this one, I have to admit that I was surprised that this one was based on a book.
And okay.
I learned this from one of our... listeners who recommended this episode, and he said, okay, why don't you guys do an episode on Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And I was like, okay, what does that mean? And I looked it up and I was like,
that's the book title.
and the reason why it is, I actually searched online and found out the book was actually renamed. So when you look at that book now, either you're not seeing that you're not going to see that title, or you see it in a very small print below the actual name. But that was the old name. And I'm assuming that after the movie was made is when it was changed, but I'm not 100% sure of that. All I know is that the book was changed. The book title was changed.
Now, I will venture to say that if there's a book, it must be a lot better than the movie, because book contains so much detail, and the movie was like off the hook. I mean, they didn't hit it on the spot when it comes to how 2019 would look like, but
yeah,
we don't have flying cars or
yeah, human looking like robots, right?
Exactly.
when I saw at the beginning, I was showing the movie to Giancarlo, and the year come on the screen, and it's like, hey, you know what? That's 2019. That was last year. You know what happened?
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest, we're getting there, guys. We're getting there, guys. We already can put chips on pigs. So,
one step at a time.
We'll get there.
Just so you know, a little tidbit on this. The actual writer of the book, he actually, I think the book released in 1962. And the writer... was, I think it was present. I'm not 100% sure of this, but all I know is that the writer of the book got to see, I think it's about 10 minutes of the movie.
Okay.
Before he died. He never got to see the entire movie.
Oh man, what a tragedy.
And
a sad story.
But It was about 20 minutes of the footage. He actually died in March 2nd, 1982. But he did say he was extremely impressed with what he saw. He actually was quoted by saying, it was my own interior world. They caught it perfectly.
Wow.
So that's a lot to say. I got goosebumps because, you know, that, I mean, he didn't get to see the entire movie. He only saw 20 minutes of it, but that was enough for him to say, you know, as an act. And I can tell you, the book, it just like any other movie that is based on the book, it doesn't follow it verbatim. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of things that they have to be changed.
Of course.
But the fact that the author said that is a very high praise for a movie.
It is. And I mean, it's coming from the person that created this world. That's the truth. So that's what I'm saying. It's a high price. Yeah, I agree with you.
He looked at, you know, when they do the casting.
Mm-hmm.
And casting is very important because you can make or break a movie based on who you choose. And I think that's the reason why it's so hard to audition for a movie and how some parts required, you know, like, for example, when they did the previous show that we did was on Ready Player One. The auditions were incredible. There are a lot of people, and I have to go through a lot of people for that. So I understand how, you know, that's very important. The author actually got to see Harrison Ford as Rick Deckard. And he said that he was more Decker than what he imagined. So it's just like, but you know, that's to be expected of Harrison Ford. You know, every role that he does is, you know, on point.
But it makes sense. Jose and I were talking yesterday about it, and he was telling me that it has happened with Harrison Ford several times. He has set an expectation that if it's not him, people don't want anybody else.
For instance, in Indiana Jones, that's the thing that's happening right now. They don't want to make another one because they don't want to either reboot it or make an extra. How many movies are there now? Like four?
Oh, yes.
It'll be the fifth. Yeah.
So. Way too many movies.
They don't want to stain that legacy that he has set up.
They don't want to milk it anymore, so
it's enough. It's funny that you say that because I remember reading for this movie, Harrison Ford actually cut his hair. So to make sure, and I don't know how this makes sense, though, but he cut his hair because he didn't want to be wearing a hat on this movie.
Okay.
Because of Indiana Jones.
Yes.
So Ridley Scott wasn't too happy when he did that because he did it without telling anybody. But it turned out to be for the best because, I mean, if you look at Harrison Ford in the movie, like with that haircut, that plays into the part that he did.
Yeah, and I totally get that he might wanted to have a hat because of the cop investigator thingy.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he looked great. And honestly, it did a good job to stay detoured from looking like another character he does.
Yeah.
You know? I actually found funny the guy that goes around with him that does the origami figures.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, his personality, man, it's like, this guy dislikes the whole world.
He doesn't want to be even in the movie, so he's just like,
yeah.
I'm not a replicant.
And then his head is so colorful. It's like he looks like a version of Prince coming out of a thriller horror movie.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with the little bow tie and everything.
Yeah. So this movie, when it came out to the theaters, I remember reading. I don't think I saw it in the theaters, but I have read how the people that saw it when it came out in the theater did not like it because it made no sense. It was very confusing. Especially, and everybody agrees with me when I mentioned the origami figures, you know? And they seem to be very confused as to what was the meaning of that. What does it mean? Because it wasn't, it didn't make any sense. So they actually did a couple of cuts. And the final cut for this movie came out in 2007. And it's, I think Ridley Scott mentioned that that was his favorite cut.
Okay.
The favorite, that's a cut that we actually saw.
Nah, final but cut. I wanna ask you guys, like, is this such a different movie from what I watch on this cut?
Yes.
Well, yeah, because the thing is, when you watch that movie, the one, the original one on the theaters, and I don't know if you got to see it on the theaters?
No, definitely not.
If you watch that movie, you come out thinking about what happened. You it's kind of like someone throws information at you, and you can't really make a connection.
Okay.
Certain things don't make any sense, and they don't tell you about it, so you're completely in the blank. Like right now, you understand the origami figures.
Yeah.
But without the context of the origami figure, someone just shows you the origami figures, you're like, okay, what does that have to do with the movie?
But I mean, if it's not different from the original cut, it was pretty straightforward. Like, the guy was walking away because he didn't want to take a job, and the guy was making an origami figure of a chicken.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I mean, it's kind of very self-explanatory. What's happening?
Remember, you saw the final cut.
Exactly.
So
that final cut had all the pieces that people complained that they didn't see in the original cut.
Such as, you see, we spend a lot of time like watching the replicants, like meeting people, letting themselves loose and everything.
Yeah.
You didn't get that in the first cut.
Oh.
Well, I mean, the original.
The original, yeah.
You didn't get that.
And that explains why this movie, and you know, I kind of like to call it a sleeper, because it didn't make, you know, it actually lost money, and they pull it because of that. People were looking at this movie and they're like, okay, what did I just watch?
And still, they made some return, but it was very short,
mm-hmm.
to be honest.
Yeah. But after the movie came out, the final cut, it just like it blew up and it became a cult. You know, it's a cult film. I mean, it's a classic movie. And I like to think. See, I don't know, but if this is true or not. But I like to think that Ridley Scott wasn't happy either, because of the what he said, that the final cut was his favorite cut.
Okay.
So I like to think that if he says this is the final, this is the one that he likes, he did not like the others.
And I mean, that was what probably was a drive for him to make the other cuts, to try to polish that work that he had done.
Mm-hmm.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. The movie is about this detective.
Private detective? Because they tell that he's not a cop.
Well, he's supposed to be part of this force that apparently doesn't exist anymore, because he was retired when mm-hmm. at the beginning of the movie. That is, and it makes sense why he was retired, because this special division of the police was supposed to track and terminate the replicants. And the replicants originally were called androids or robots, but
they're practically indistinguishable from humans.
Yeah, and the writers decided to call them replicants because they felt at the time that calling them robots or androids, it sounded too like
too mainstream or standard.
Like a mobile device.
Yeah, like something. Yeah, like, well, there was, yeah. For now you probably call Google, but back then there was. But it was very bland. Okay. And they wanted to make something like,
you intricate know, into the characteristics of that type of,
yeah,
so they, symbiotic type of life, right?
Yeah. So they call in replicants, and basically what happens is replicants, they're completely indistinguishable from humans. So after, I think they said, was it 4 years, they start developing their own, you know, I don't know if you want to call it feelings or you know, thoughts. So they became, I guess humans became afraid of them. And the company that created them started doing doing them with an expiration date. So after 4 years, they basically just died. And the movie is based on this. There was a group of replicants. They stole the spaceship and they came back to Earth.
Okay.
In search of their creator. And they hired this detective, which is Harrison Ford, to come back out of retirement so he can track this replicants and get rid of them before, you know,
they cause problems or something.
Yeah, problems. So mainly before the word get out. Because, you know, supposedly there was no more replicants. So that's basically the movie in a nutshell. He's trying to find these. And so in the process, he falls in love with one. And, you know,
I mean, excuse me. But she is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And that's something that I loved about this show. They made, just like in the movie Gattaca, they made a beautiful blend of classical feeling with modern. I mean, in the looks, how people dress up, the haircuts, the architecture. Yeah. Like there are things that look rustic and there are things that look very cyberpunk at the same time.
And to that thing, to that thought, right there, I'm going to go out and say here, and it's going to be a huge declaration. To me, Blade Runner created the genre of cyberpunk. I don't know if you guys agree with this, but to me, this movie created that genre.
I see it as the best example out there about cyberpunk, because it has it all. Even now, all the portrays of how, you know, the neo, I'll say it, neo Japanese CD,
yeah,
just like manga and anime. This has it all. Yeah, the thing is in Los Angeles, but
yeah,
it is what it is.
I mean, it you know, granted,
look anything like Los Angeles.
No, it doesn't look like, it doesn't look anything like.
It looks more like Tokyo.
Yeah.
So I mean, I see in this movie, I see Ghost in the Shell.
Yes.
I see Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah.
It to me, this is like where that came from, and every other movie after that. You have your typical billboards on the street where you have the Chinese, Japanese, or Asian geisha-looking woman advertising something that we don't quite know what it is.
Swallowing a pill in the middle of the screen.
Yeah.
Continuously. I was like, what is this? Some kind of hypnotic freaking commercial?
No, she's trying to say, drink your vitamins. Throughout the whole film.
Like, here's a Molly. Be happy.
Be happy. Don't be shy. Just drink this.
Wow. So, this movie was very...
We could call it a pioneer on its genre, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was very
it is definitely,
involved.
Yes. It is definitely the gold standard for that genre. It is. Undeniable.
Yeah.
So, you being the first, you know, the person who basically just saw that. I mean, I've seen this movie so many times, and I don't know how many you've seen it, but
at least more than eight.
Yeah, it's one of those. What is your? I'm very curious to see your first impressions. I remember when I was watching this movie, there's a couple of things that I wanted to just comment on, but I was kind of waiting for you to see it, especially the eyes.
Yeah. And I did comment about that when we were watching the movie the first time. I was like, wait, look at their eyes. It's not a reflection.
So
it just looks like you can just see that on the supposed droids.
The
replicants.
Where I really noticed them first, right? And this is going back to the times the previous times that I've seen this movie. The first time that I noticed, although it was already on screen, was when I saw the owl. That supposed, you know, it was clearly a replicant. And I guess it's very apparent because they're very big. And, you know, owls have typically big eyes. So you could see that
giant orb in their face.
Exactly. And you see it in interrogation. They did on and Terrell's office.
Okay.
And you kind of, if you pay attention throughout the movie, every time you see a replicant, you kind of see this thing, you know, on their eyes.
Yeah, it looks like that, like the aperture on a camera, on a smaller version inside the retina.
Yeah, and I think
that's what it looks like.
Yeah, they actually created that effect by using a, I think it was a reflector, and they were reflecting light straight into the actor's eyes as they look at the camera. So they kind of like creating that red eye effect that you get when you mm-hmm. take a photo with a bright flash.
True.
Kind of like that. So what I found this interesting is that although I know the what happens on this movie, because obviously I've seen it too many times, it is the first time that I realize something unusual. When Rachel was in Deckard's apartment and they were having that argument discussion, and you could see the red eyes on Rachel, and for a brief moment, and I don't know, I'm going to have to rewatch the movie, but because I think that's the only time that I see this on Deckard's eyes, I can catch a glimpse of the red eye.
But it was an argument or a ruffle tumble kind of play date?
No, it was... He walked behind her. I think it was getting her a drink.
Okay.
And he walked behind her, and he kind of glanced back, and you kind of got a glimpse. And that's the first time that I saw or I noticed. And that's the reason why I said I am going to rewatch and see if that was the only time. But to me, I don't remember watching that before.
Okay.
And why that is important is because for everybody that's watched the movie, there's the question lingering in the air as to if Deckard is a replicant or not. And throughout the entire movie, there are hints all over, but no one really goes out and say in the movie straight out if he is or not. It's always some hint that you have to interpret.
So, and here's the thing, I want to throw this out there. There's no really hard feelings for the director, but the tricky motherfuckery that they did is that in any other replicant, every take, you can see this eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But in Harrison Ford, it's just like glimpse in the mm-hmm. whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like very, very short moments.
Yeah.
So like you had to catch it. So they purposely try to deceive you not to think that he is.
And when you, and I don't know if you noticed this, but you asked me that question when we were watching the movie, and I kept quiet because I was just like, because that's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you watch the movie, and I don't know if you agree with me, that's the whole point, is for you to, like, okay, gather the clues yourself and try to decide. That's basically what's going on in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You're mm-hmm. actually the detective yourself, and you're trying to find out, is he or not? There's clues all over. Like, for example, when Rachel asks Deckard, like, you know, you do those tests. Like, have you ever done the test on yourself? I mean, I was like, whoa.
But the answer was better.
Yeah?
That was the best thing about it. So yeah, there are hints, but it's evident that in Deckard's, it's more difficult for you to realize if he's a replicant, because it's not like in every other take that you see a replicant where the eyes are shining like that. So mm-hmm. so it feels like purposely they made sure to make the person that is watching the movie deceived to think that he's not.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about the origami, I mean, I believe there's three origami figures. The first one was a chicken made out of plain paper. This is when I think Deckard was trying to chicken out The second one was a man made out of discarded, I think it was a paper match.
Yeah, paper match.
And then the last one.
He has a Woody.
Yeah.
You notice that? The little man has a Woody. He was made of wood. And I was like, well, oh, you're feeling cocky. Oh, that's
it. Oh, my God.
I remember that. Bold statement.
Bold statement.
And then the last one was made out of foiled, and it was a unicorn.
Yeah.
Now, it begs the question, okay? Deckard dreams of unicorns. And we know that replicants are implanted with memories. You know, in the case of Rachel, how she's talking about her, I think it was her aunt, and she has his pictures. So we know that he dreams of unicorns, and now we have this guy making an origami of the unicorn, like tenting, you know, like. So the question that I have is like, okay, Decker knows this implanted memories because that's what helps him do his job. Okay, so is this dude knows it just like he does?
Yeah.
So to help him capture, I mean, I don't think so, because he wasn't part of that division. He's just a plain out police officer.
Mm-hmm.
So I always thought, you know, that this guy might be a replicant himself. And it wasn't clear in the movie that he in fact knew this.
Yep.
It's almost as if it was a hint for us, the one that were watching the movie. But, you know, how he knows this? How does he have that memory? I mean, it would be easier for me to understand it if he was part of that division that Deckard belongs to. But by the time the movie started, that division has already been gone and he was already retired. So, I mean, was he part of the division in the past?
I think it was. I think it was in the past. They kind of they kind of led you to think that when they're calling him into action to duty. But at the same time, if you think about it, like these kind of memories, it's easy for anybody to really think they're just dreams, that they are just deja vus or thoughts that are just invading your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they are actually the ghosts in the shell.
You see, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that is a perfect example of how another story borrows from this. It makes me wonder, because that's the whole thing behind Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, that it is. I mean, they think that everything is going right and dandy until they realize, no, this doesn't exist.
Yeah. So, What do you notice? What part of this movie actually called your attention? Like that really imprinted or impressed you when you? I mean, I know it's kind of a hard question because the whole movie is amazing, but I'm kind of curious because this was your very first time watching the movie.
Well, I mean, I adore how the whole world is portrayed, what the future looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, I did like how the replicants are portrayed.
Oh, yes.
And I mean, I felt fascinated by the fact that their lifespan was so short.
It makes you feel really bad for them.
Yeah.
And you kind of, in a way, you sympathize.
Yeah.
This replicant.
It's a short and sad life.
Yeah.
And they're running for their lives. You know, they just want to leave.
Yeah.
It's not like they're coming to get us.
You know, that scene where Harrison Ford was after the snake lady, which, by the way, I don't know if you noticed, she felt very comfortable with the snake, but that was her pet snake. So that's why she was comfortable in the movie, because, you know, she was very familiar. But going back to the topic, when you see her running away from Harrison Ford and Deckard, and he shoots her, I felt really sad.
Yeah.
Because all she wanted to do is live. And it's not like that she's going to live anyways, because by the time, I think by the time we see these characters, 4 years has passed by.
Yeah.
So they're about to die anyways.
Yeah, they seem to be in the final stages of their lifespan. That's all.
And that's the reason why they came back, because they were looking for the creator, because yeah. they, like, you know, the main bad guy said, I want more life, before he killed Terrell. And
they wanted answers
and it makes
to live more.
Exactly. Huh? It makes you wonder, because you don't hear from these group until they, you know, hijacked that ship, and I think they killed everybody in the ship. You don't hear from them prior, or you don't, at least they don't mention in the movie how they so it makes you wonder if they did all this, because it is hard to get back to Earth with all the protection they have. So it's hard to believe that they'll be able to enter without killing someone.
Yeah.
So it makes you think, at least it makes me think, and I'm kind of curious to see what your thoughts are, that they did all this because they had no other choice in an attempt to actually, you know, live longer. And it makes you wonder if, in fact, they were the creator was able to fix them, will they continue on their violent path, or will they just fade away and go somewhere else and live their life? I don't know.
Well, honestly, they are so similar to us. My take on that is that they would have done what they seem to have been doing. Because if you notice, they were not just there hunting down the creator. They were trying to live among people.
Yeah.
All of them. That's what they were doing. The lady with the snake, what was she doing? She was not chasing down the doctor. She was being a performer, living a life. Rachel, she was living a life too.
Yeah.
So they are not here hunting down the creator to get more life. Some of them actually were just merely trying to live a life and fit in. And I think that that's what they would try to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of, for me, it's kind of hard to watch a movie and feel a little sympathy for the nemesis, you know, the enemy, the bad guy.
And this happened when we also did the episode on Detroit Become Human.
Yeah.
It's the same exact topic. It's androids just racing against humans to reclaim equal rights.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the funny thing is that in the very beginning of the movie, they disclose it. They say they are very similar to humans. They are superior in strength, but in intelligence-wise, they are just the same.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they're androids, they are not our nemesis when it comes to our intelligence, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I always thought about that. And that every time I think about that, it makes it a little sadder for me. Because, I mean, granted, Harrison Ford will still need to do his job because they still committed crimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I always question, wasn't it better to capture them? I mean, I like to think that they dealt with this, you know, especially Harrison Ford. They came from a department that handled replicants in the past. And apparently they got rid of all of them, and that's why he was retired. So I always like to think that they had a way to capture them before.
I would think so too.
So wouldn't it be better to capture these individuals and to their surprise realize that they're going to be dying anyways, because, you know, by the end of the movie, you know, the only character that was left died out because the time ran out.
Yeah, their lives are just as fast as the shooting start.
So
it's gone before you notice.
I don't know. I in this movie I relate to the replicant and the humans at the same time.
But you see, like, I think that, for example, Harrison Ford, Decker,
mm-hmm.
he does really sympathize with the androids. He's doing his job, and it seems that I felt at some point if the androids that he had conflict with, they wouldn't have retaliated or attacked, he wouldn't have killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like what happened with Rachel.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to think, was that the snake lady, for example, she...
He wouldn't have killed her if she wouldn't have tried to choke him up.
Yeah,
she definitely wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the other two ladies that opened the door, mm-hmm. he'll be dead.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and that's what I'm saying. If the others wouldn't act up like that, he wouldn't have tried to kill them. Because look at Rachel, for example. Rachel, at any given point, she retaliated towards him or tried to attack him. And that kind of disarmed him. He didn't try one bit to try to hurt her or put her down.
And one of the scenes, they kind of, and I noticed it, that Harrison Ford kind of freaked out, is when that other replicant was choking him in the street after he killed the snake lady. Mm-hmm. And Rachel basically saved his life. But the first thing he sees when this guy falls to the ground because he shot him in the head was Rachel pointing a gun straight at him.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think that was like a shocking revelation to him, because she's a replicant and she has a gun at him. So it makes you wonder, look, you know, what came through, you know, through his mind when he saw that visual?
I don't know. I think that for sure, Rachel, I feel that he never had a doubt on Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of trusted her character. And Rachel is being pretty straightforward toward the whole movie, if you think about it.
Oh, she has been.
She
was. Oh, by the way, that scene when she was leaving the apartment, mm-hmm. remember that she was sad and you know, you could see tears in her eyes. That was actually real tears.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you remember that scene prior when he pushed her.
Yeah.
He pushed her really hard and it obviously hurt. So she was actually crying from that. To the point where Harrison Ford first so bad that after they cut the scene, I think he mooned her. Just to clear.
Oh my God.
And then after that, they were okay. She was laughing and stuff like that. But those are real. And I want to watch that scene again. So I just, and you know, we're talking about Ridley Scott here. So whenever you look at the vehicles, you are going to see the instruments from the movie Aliens and the sounds from the movie Aliens.
Well, I'm taking notes from Harrison Ford there. Just push the shit out of a girl and then move her. She'll be yours, guys.
And you remember that scale that Harrison Ford got from the
snake lady.
From the snake lady.
Yep.
And they put it in this microscope and they zoomed in. And you see that intricate, you know,
like
zoom-in pattern from whatever that was. That wasn't a snake scale. That was a marijuana bud.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Through the microscope.
Oh, man. You shouldn't be looking at that in a microscope. You shouldn't be turning that crap up and hitting it by heart.
I found that to be, you know, kind of like funny. You know, that, you know, here we are. And, you know, I only found out this after I researched it. But I'm like, I'm looking at it. It's like, okay, must be snake.
What is this thing? It is so strange. Maybe I can get it on a ghetto.
So, yeah, if you guys haven't seen this movie, I strongly recommend it. And if you follow sci-fi, I kind of find it hard to believe that you haven't seen it already. But, you know, that's a possibility. If you haven't seen it and you like sci-fi, I strongly recommend you go watch this movie.
And there's a lot of elements of the movie that honestly, I feel like they hit what movies back then at the time would try to look futuristic and end up being way too futuristic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But still, it didn't go far beyond the concept anyways.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, it's not going to look like that in the future probably, but there's going to be a lot of things that are going to become that, which is what you and I have spoken a lot about, how science, it's imitating art at the end of the day when it comes with new modern developments.
Let me put it this way. I mean, it is so dad. You know, we see this from from tablets in comparison to the year 2001 Space Odyssey movie. We see it with the Razor in comparison to Star Trek communicators. So if you look at this movie, you'll find that the Cybertruck looks very similar to the vehicles that drive in this movie.
Yeah.
And no surprise there, because I think I heard somewhere that Elon Musk, this is one of Elon Musk's favorite movies. And he kind of picked that design. And as a matter of fact, if you notice when they did the unveiled, you know, the guys on the leather jacket, they're all very cyberpunk.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's a cyberpunk-styled truck. So I agree with you. We have had sci-fi in generations after generations. I mean, we have... There's movies back, you know, dating back to the 40s, the 50s, right? So you have this kids that grew up watching this on their TVs, on the radio, if you're old enough, on the movie theaters. And you grow up and become someone, you know, maybe a scientist, maybe someone that an inventor. And what's the first thing that comes to your mind is you're going to create something that it's not in existence, that it's going to help in some way.
Get you closer to that dream.
And you're going to be influenced by the things you saw as a kid. So even if you don't intend to copy from art, you're influenced by art. So whenever you do, in everything you do, is going to be modeled after that. And I think that, you know, that's... Yeah, that's my personal opinion. I mean, I could be wrong, but I've seen way too many of those things to kind of ignore at this point.
It's true. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we are constantly doing. I think I've seen this in previous episodes. That's the godly element into us humans, is our creation ability.
Mm-hmm.
And we create new things constantly. That's part of our evolution. We're not the same that we were 100 years back.
Yep.
Or three centuries back. We're constantly evolving. We're constantly seeing things that are looking possible. And then when you come to see a few decades, a few centuries after, boof, it's just a normal deal.
Yep. But we still have no flying cars.
No.
And this movie was in 2019.
I'm disappointed. I'm waiting for flying cars. Yeah. Elon Musk, you should do flying cars, please.
You know, electric flying car. You know, I'll get on that. Honestly. Okay. You guys let us know what you think. I mean, this is a classic sci-fi movie.
I'm going to watch it a couple more times.
And like I said, I still believe strongly that this movie created the cyberpunk genre. So if you're into cyberpunk, if you like Ghost in the Shell and you haven't seen this movie, go ahead and watch it. There's going to be a lot of similarities. And if you like the genre, you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, this is the end of our show for now. Please let us know if you like this episode.
And if you have any idea about which topic you would like us to discuss in the next episode, feel free to reach out. We'd love to hear from you.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at @SciFiRedmond. And if you like this podcast, please share it.
And don't forget to rate us in your favorite podcast platform. This will help us grow. Thank you.
See you next time. This is Science Fiction Remnant, signing off.